What up, fishes? I'm Mark Walsh, director of Party Source Rex, and you're listening to the Pixar Podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
Squirrel!
You can't rush Arch.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at me.
A stranger from the outside.
Greetings.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. This is episode number 114. ThePixarPodcast.com/114 is where you can find the show notes for this episode. I'm Derek Clements, and I have a couple co-hosts with me today. They've both been on the podcast before. Let's start with the one that's been on most recently, Brooke Parker.
Oh, I'm most recent?
Yeah,
oh,
cool. Only a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
But it was a long time ago.
That's true. I guess looking back, it was so long.
Yeah. We reviewed Frozen.
We did. Yeah. That was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. How have you been since then? I haven't even talked to you. Okay,
We have talked a little bit. Okay. I have been good. I've stuck by Frozen this whole time.
Yeah.
We were really excited. It hadn't really blown up yet.
It wasn't the cultural phenomenon.
Right. And we liked it. And some people have dropped off that... train dropped off that bandwagon, but I've stuck with it. I like it still.
Okay.
So
nice.
Yeah. That's the update on how I feel about Frozen.
Excellent. We needed that. And then the other guest co-host is Hunter Phillips.
Hi.
Hello. So last time you were on was years ago. You remember that?
Oh my gosh. Now yes.
You're like, wait, have I been on this podcast before?
As you were talking to Brooke, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, I know I'm going to be on in the future.
Yeah.
But the past,
yes. And you are going to be on in the future, so yes. we'll say that as a tease in a minute. But yeah, so back in like 2011 or 2012, you had started a Simpsons blog.
Oh yes,
remember
I did.
That? Yeah, 500 days of Simpsons. Did you hear about this, Brooke?
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
that sounds cool.
He has like dozens of episodes of the Simpsons, like reviewed and thoughtfully critiqued and stuff. It's good.
The goal was 500. I got through like 70 of them.
That's
and
a
before,
lot.
Before I just, I went to like London for a summer and said, oh, it'll be bigger and better when I come home, and then never.
Is it still online?
Oh yeah, it's still there.
Okay.
And I think I've updated the description to like, mention, because it was originally a daily site.
Right. That
was
a huge.
Which
was
the crazy part.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I've updated it to make it not a daily site anymore, and I still threaten to go back to it every once in a while. And I might now that I'm done with college.
Yeah, but, nice. Congratulations about that, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, fresh graduate. And, as you said, you will be on the Pixar Podcast soon. You recorded some top secret, very, very exciting stuff. Right?
That is true. Yes. I don't know how to respond to this.
I'm intrigued.
Classified information.
So, in a couple weeks, listeners, you will hear Hunter's special episode of the Pixar Podcast, and it's going to be very exciting. But, guys, we are here today to discuss... the complex and controversial subject of Tomorrowland.
And controversial.
Controversial.
Complicated it is.
Yes, both. So I'm curious to know. So we're going to review the film. So listeners, if you have not seen Tomorrowland yet, don't listen to this unless you want to be spoiled by the film. We're just going to do a full spoiler review. So feel free to share whatever you want. But first, let's listen to the trailer of Tomorrowland.
Newton?
That's not mine.
What's not yours?
The pen. I've never...
What if there was a place?
Dad, I just need you to look at this. Does it look weird?
A secret place. Where nothing was impossible.
You're not saying this!
Casey, stop it!
Go away! Did you see the dog?
I want you to take me there.
Take you where?
Where'd you get this?
Who are you, kid?
What you saw was a place where the best and the brightest people in the world came together to actually change it. We've been looking for someone like you for a very long time.
Why? It's
Something happened over there? Something bad?
They followed you here?
Who?
Come on! Get in!
How is this a good idea?
There's one way in. They know we're coming, so follow me.
All the people, why me?
He thinks you can fix the future.
Hang on!
You wanted to see Tomorrowland. Here it comes.
So that was the trailer for Tomorrowland. Guys, here's what I want to know. I want to know your first reaction to the film, and then if that reaction has changed in the days since you've seen it. So let's start with you, Brooke.
Okay. So I just saw it yesterday.
Okay.
So I haven't had a lot of time for it to stew. But my first reaction, like right when the film ended, my brother had said, my brother had seen it like a week before, and he said that he loved the first half and then he didn't like the second half and then felt like overall it was a C movie. So I had that in my brain. And so when I was watching it, I had kind of a low expectation for the second half, ended up feeling fine about the second half. And when it ended, I thought, yeah, I like that movie. And then I went home, and probably like an hour later, I was like, that movie was a mess. And I don't really know, like, it was, yeah, just messy, and I couldn't really fit lots of the pieces together. And I have progressively liked it a little bit less, but I still stand by my general feeling of, like, positive, mildly positive.
Okay, so we'll dig into that in a few minutes. Yeah. Over the next few minutes. Hunter, what about you?
I don't think I'm too far off from Brooke. When I first saw the movie, I saw it with someone who's very close to the movie, and so that tainted my what I could say about it, what I could feel about it. And that makes it sound like I felt worse than I did, but I liked the movie leaving. Like, there was a lot of goodwill from certain things that I will talk about, I'm sure. But over the last week since I have seen it, the strangeness of that movie has started to reveal itself, and not like in a fun way, like in a way that's similar to Prometheus and other things that someone's written that just start, these aren't parking lot questions. They're laying in bed questions that haunt you for a while. And it's really unpleasant to have to reconcile them. So ultimately I think Tomorrowland's a very, very bizarre movie.
Okay. And you've seen it, you saw it when, like a week ago?
A week ago tonight.
So how have your feelings evolved over the last week?
I guess the first thing I said when it was over was that this is a, and this quote, that is a minor league weirdo movie that has a major league weirdo movie pushing in from the edges.
Nice.
And since then, I think that's still true, but there's less stuff that I like about it a week later than there was the night I saw it.
Okay.
So I'm with you, Brooke.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's sometimes the opposite, but this was like slowly liking it less.
Okay. I think I like it the best of the three of us. Some of the weird, the strangeness that you mentioned is stuff that I really liked about the film. Like we can get into some specific, but I'll answer my own question first though. Of when I first saw the movie, I had so much anticipation for this movie. Like, I wanted it to be so good. And I was worried for it. Like, I was worried for it like a family member that is, like, getting into some drugs or something. I wanted it to be okay, and I wanted to love it despite whatever flaws it might have. And so when I first saw the movie, I was disappointed that I didn't love it as much as I wanted to love it. And it felt a little bit like I had been lectured to for 2 hours. Like, it seems a little bit more like a lecture. It has these interesting ideas about the way the world should be. And I felt immediately after seeing it that it was like, oh, I don't know that worked as a movie. I think it was more just like somebody telling me all these things. And then I've seen it two more times since then.
Wow.
Because I said, I'm going to see this movie as many times as it takes for me to love it. And I don't know that I probably will slow down after the third time. But I, the more I see it and the more that I've sat with it, I actually have grown to like it more. And some of the strangeness, some of the things that don't quite add up or work, I actually find more endearing now. And so I actually, first of all, there's a ton of individual elements of the film that I can point to that I love, that I just genuinely love. And I think overall, it still doesn't gel as a movie in the way that I would like it to. But we can talk about some of those reasons and also some of the things that you individually loved. Mm-hmm. Or didn't like. Can we talk about some of the specifics, some of the specific moments of the movie that you think are worth talking about or considering?
Yeah, I'll start. One of the things that I admire a ton about this movie is how dedicated it is to cartoonish violence.
Okay.
In a way that I don't think many blockbusters are. And I have to give that credit to Brad Bird and his background.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, a girl gets slammed by a truck in this movie and it's hilarious.
Yeah, that's
and
a great scene.
People get smashed against walls and heads are destroyed.
Ripped off.
And it's all, and it's all in a tone, I almost compared it to Grand Theft Auto when we were in the theater, because Grand Theft Auto is a series of games that I like to play. And there are some games that I think are too gruesome and graphic for me, and I don't like them. But Grand Theft Auto, when I hit a truck or when I kill someone, it's so perversely funny to me in a Looney Tunes way that I can get behind it. And this movie reminded me a lot of that.
Interesting.
That's interesting because I double checked the rating afterwards. I hadn't thought or looked at the rating at all.
Right.
But I was like, was that PG-13? Because the violence kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah.
I know that it was mostly surrounding like machine or robot people.
Yeah.
But just the image of like ripping off someone's head or being like a little girl being slammed into a truck, like it shocked me a few different times for a what I thought was a children's movie. And then they were a little bit careless with other deaths too, more so than I've seen in like PG movies before, where they just throw the guard off the railing and he dies and stuff like that. And I was just a little bit surprised by that.
So, Hunter, what do you think about the human violence in it? Because the police getting killed, like vaporized immediately.
That stuff troubles me more.
Yeah.
Like it does in the way that other movies trouble me the same.
Yeah.
And it's tough.
Yeah.
Because the movie plays, and because the idea of someone getting vaporized like that is just as wacky as the idea of one of the robot guards' face getting smushed in.
Yeah.
But it's odd when we do know that it's a real person, which I want to, maybe this is a good time to talk about the sexual subtext.
Okay.
Yes. Because I think it's really funny when Athena gets hit by the car.
Yeah.
Even if the person next to me is like really troubled, I'm like, she's a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then when George Clooney's holding her and they're about to kiss, I'm like, don't do it, Clunes. She's a little girl.
And they don't kiss.
They weren't about
to kiss. I know they weren't about to kiss.
Yeah. But that passes through everyone's head. I mean, I was sitting there and I was like, not yet bothered by it, but I was like, I could get bothered by this in any second. Because it was weird. I was like taking temperature of how I felt, and I was like, soon it will pass into the territory of creepy, but it's not quite there yet, but it's getting there.
Okay, I completely disagree with you about that, because I love that part. I love that. That's one of the things that I say, the weirdness of this movie, like, because it's not George Clooney loving a little girl. It's George Clooney as a little boy, you know, having this thing, and she is his age. I mean, she doesn't, you know, she's ageless, you know what I mean?
I love everything that scene is articulating.
Yeah.
Like, I love its sentiment and what it's going, but there's something about
the
cutting and the inner cutting and just the performance on Clooney's end that gives me I feel a little peevy.
Okay.
Even though the sentiment is, like, really warm and welcome.
Okay. That's fair. It's one of the most bizarre things you can say, like, that George Clooney has done. Like, he's flying in a jetpack, holding this little girl that he's in love with and is about to drop her off a cliff, into a machine so that she can explode and save the world. It's definitely, I see it as a gutsy thing that the movie did. I'm sure it was something that was not an easy sell. And I love that it's in this movie. It's one of these weird things that is just, crazy and bizarre. What else? Yeah, so I was going to bring that one up. I also wanted to bring up the scene, the escape scene, in George Clooney's house.
Yes.
So let's talk about that scene, you guys. That is so good.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess the thing that, because coming off of Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road,
right,
there aren't a lot of movies that can stack up to the action that movie.
Yeah.
But I think that the escape sequence in Tomorrowland is on par with a lot of the stuff in Mad. Like, it is truly excellent. And Brad Bird's sense of space.
Yeah.
And, like, and a fun house. It's a fun house in the same way that, like, some of the stuff in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is. Like, it's just really well executed one thing after another.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great scene.
Yeah, I don't have much to say, but I thought it was fun. It kept me on my toes.
Yeah, it's just, it's so inventive. Yeah, it has a surprise at every turn. And then, again, there's the uniqueness of George Clooney, you know, and a teenage girl getting in a bathtub, and then that bathtub shoots out into the sky, and that's how they escape. Like, that's something you don't see every day. And it's just so fun, yeah. That was a really fun scene. Along those lines, I think that scene was helped, as well as the rest of the movie, was helped by Michael Giacchino's score. I really liked this score a lot. Did you guys pay attention to the music at all?
It was honestly kind of invisible to me.
Yeah.
In this
okay.
One. Like, because I normally love his stuff.
Yeah.
But this one, and I went in anticipating, because I even loved his stuff in Inside Out.
Right.
But it's, this one felt kind of not present.
Okay. Have you listened to it at all since the movie?
No, I have not.
Mm-mm. Okay. Interesting. I really liked it. I think that it serves the movie well. It has a couple interesting themes that he repeats throughout the movie, but yeah, it's a pretty rousing score, so you should listen to it. Go back and listen to it. It's good. Are there other specific moments of the film that you want to touch on?
I loved all the performances in general. The ones that I felt like were the weakest for some reason was that couple in the store in Houston.
Okay.
What are the actors there?
Keegan-Michael Key and Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just felt like I wasn't on board there for some reason. There was something off, and I was like almost relieved when they died and left.
It's because you're wondering why Tomorrowland needs people stationed in Texas to wait for Athena to
show up. Yeah, that was part of it. And part of it was they just seemed silly to me, and I didn't feel the tension of like them being like the enemy or anything like that. I just,
yeah. And he's introduced with like the Star Wars theme showing, which is like,
yeah,
one of the more like stomach churning record scratch moments for me. I have a hard time when I hear the Star Wars theme in places
because it just seems too on the
nose.
It's
very not funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thematically, I thought that scene was interesting because you have this theme that comes out that the movie has a lot to say about pop culture and about the type of pop culture that we like and that we're into as a society. We like explosions and we like
Redbirds movies.
Redbirds movies, yeah, exactly. But also, you know, the darker, you know, Hunger Games and those types of, and this movie kind of takes a shot at those movies. And I thought there was something thematic going on as there's this destruction all around of these pop culture figures falling down and like getting being part of the destruction. Am I just like out of left field on this one?
No, that's I've only seen the movie once. I feel like that's something you notice having seen the movie the second time.
Yeah.
But that's because you don't really get that. I don't feel like that theme has really gelled until way later in the movie.
Yeah. Right.
And so I didn't have that idea watching that scene.
Yeah.
I like that idea, but as far as that store goes, I kind of wished that, if I remember right, you know, it's populated mostly by, like, Star Trek toys or Star Wars or Iron Giants and Mr.
Incredibles.
Yes, lots
of Red Bird, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wished, and one thing that I was missing throughout this movie, weirdly enough, even though it's deliberately about that retrofuturism and that idea of the future of the 50s, I wish there would have been more of that in places like the store and beyond our brief glimpse of Tomorrowland. I wish there were more visual references to that kind of space age idealism that Brad Bird clearly admires so much.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And yeah, I didn't like that store ended up being a bunch of tchotchkes from like the 70s and 80s when clearly the interesting era is 20 years before.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It was interesting, like, how many of those things Disney owns. Like, it had all these properties of, like, Star Wars and also, you know, Pixar had Zurg was in there.
Was there?
Yeah, there's a Zurg.
There's your third viewing.
Yeah, exactly. There's also, there's a sound effect that's the Buzz Lightyear laser as well. There's lots of good geek, Pixar geek stuff. that scene, okay, let me throw out, I don't think this is normally a good thing to do in a review, to say, like, I wish the movie had done this, or review the movie that you didn't see. You know, we should review the movie on its own terms, but I think this movie would have been interesting as a series. You know, it's not a series, but I think some of the story would have been more, it just would have had more space to be alive if it had, you know, like a 10 episode run or something. There's all this stuff, like, I even think the movie would benefit from viewers watching it in chunks. Like, there's a lot to take in each segment of the film. I don't know, I think it would have broken up easily into a series that could have been interesting.
If we're talking about what-ifs...
Okay. Uh-oh.
What I'm about to say is antithetical to everything that I think about modern movies.
Okay.
Because this is a complaint I make about every other movie, and yeah, this is something that Tomorrowland doesn't do.
Yeah.
But I wish it did. I wish that this movie ended in, I think, a battle for Tomorrowland.
Mm.
I think I wanted some kind of conflict that made it feel like Tomorrowland itself was more than just Hugh Laurie and a few soldiers.
Mm.
And that there was something at stake, because the monitor, is it called?
Yeah.
Never gels for me as a device.
Yeah.
Like, I can never figure out what it is and why it's there. And the things that I'm understanding from the first half of the movie are that Tomorrowland is this place that had so much potential and it lost it. And I'm like, oh, is there some kind of political, like, did it lose? Like, is there evil there? What's going on there? And I think I wanted some kind of external, like, reason to protect this place.
Mm-hmm.
Because the movie's all about protecting these ideas, but not about this place really at all. And, mm-hmm, but the first half of the movie makes it seem like the place is the thing.
Yeah.
And so maybe not a battle is what I'm looking for, but something to articulate that Tomorrowland as a thing,
yeah,
matters more than the vibes that the monitor sends out, I guess.
This is probably my biggest beef with the whole movie, is I am confused and not sold on the whole idea of Tomorrowland existing.
Okay.
I don't understand, like, I went home and I was really trying to deconstruct it. I don't understand how it's a noble thing to have, like, this elitist, separatist dimension where you just leave the Earth behind. And then I didn't understand why they were so concerned about the Earth if it wasn't going to affect Tomorrowland, and they seemed to want to be apart from all of the corrupt and lame people on our Earth anyway, so let's just make this, like, futuristic, better place where all the dreamers and the thinkers and the not corrupt people can come together and make this new world. I just didn't understand the connection between our Earth and Tomorrowland and why they would care about each other when they didn't seem to care very much. And even at the end, it was like, we're going to recruit people, more awesome people to come, mm-hmm, be in our awesome thing. And there was no indication that they were going to, like, export that stuff and help Earth after.
Why don't we bring Tomorrowland to the people? The criticism level, a lot of people think Brad Bird is an objectivist.
Right. The Ayn Rand stuff.
I don't necessarily. Uh-huh. Like, I think the messaging in The Incredibles is the kid who's fast should be allowed to run track.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's good at. The guy who's who's good at drawing should be allowed to be an animator. That's what he's good at. This movie's sending off a different message than that. And it's what Brooke's describing, which is Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I've heard this criticism a lot. Let me offer this as an alternative.
I would love to hear the alternative, because I was just confused. I'm just like, so, I don't think that's his message, but that's
Hugh,
what I'm getting.
Hugh Laurie's character definitely seems to be that, the elitist, exclusive, you know, like, he rejects the thing that's just for fun. He wants people. I think that is his vision of Tomorrowland. I think at the end of the movie, what it conveys to me is that they do open it up, and it becomes, they open up the portals, and I don't think they're just stealing the smart people from Earth, or from the normal dimension, and keeping them in Tomorrowland. The idea that I got was, like, let's inspire Earth and get people, like, inspire them. See, the idea of Tomorrowland is it be inspired by this thing, right? It's it's wanting you to feel wonder and awe and like there is an optimistic hope for the future. And so I think that is the thing. I don't think that the place Tomorrowland is intended to be a place where you go to escape something or where you go to leave Earth behind. I think it's more of an idea, and maybe that's kind of where your criticism comes into play, of like, it's more of an idea than an actual place in the movie. But that's my take on it, is that at the end of the movie, they do open up the gates, and it's not as exclusive as finding only, you know, the smart people. It's like, let's open up the gates, and let's inspire the whole world by letting these creative people see Tomorrowland, and then they'll pass on what they experience to the rest of the world. That's why I took it.
I can see that, but part of the explanation at the beginning is that politicians and leaders and stuff like that are too corrupt, and we can't do this on the regular dimension mm-hmm. of Earth, so we right. have to create this other one. So it seems like it was created with this kind of elitist thing in mind, and I just think with that being the founding ideal, wouldn't they be worried? I mean, I didn't quite get the sense that it was opened up to everyone at the end. Okay. But don't you think they would be worried about that coming into their...
Did either of you see the animated sequences that were supposed to be at the beginning of the movie?
But, yeah, the Pixar animators yeah. did, yeah.
I did not.
They...
In fact, let's do a little clip. They'll be on the show notes for today's episode, thepixarproducts.com/114. Here's a little clip. This set it up, Hunter, and then we'll talk about it.
This describes the origins of Plus Ultra, which is the group that founds Tomorrowland, and gives context for why the place exists.
Okay.
Since the dawn of recorded history, mankind has boldly pursued its destiny, bolstered by an unwavering belief in progress. Yet progress has a dark cost. With every advance comes the great temptation to misuse new knowledge for domination. Innovation, if left ungoverned by conscience, can lead to destruction. Yet there is no such thing as fate. We can, and always must, make our own future. Paris, 1889. A world's fair just like this one. Four of the world's most brilliant minds. Edison, Eiffel, Verne, Tesla, come together to form Plus Ultra, a group dedicated to the cultivation of mankind's greatest resource, imagination. And upon that foundation, they would build their dream, a place where nothing was impossible. But no dream
could be achieved. And so that clip, I think it's making me feel... I mean, I saw it before the movie. I saw it a couple months ago. I don't know how, but yeah. I can't remember. But
it's a little shady.
It makes me feel interested in both of your takes more, which is a problem. That's a movie not doing its job. But it makes me more empathetic to your reason, because there's that nice, like, 50s idealist, like, there's that thing at the end where there's those guys working at their animating desk or sketching out, drawing stuff for a better, big, beautiful tomorrow, right? Yeah. But at the same time, a lot of it is that kind of scary, it's animated in that kind of scary Ayn Rand Art Deco way that is like triumph, almost triumph of the will. And
why did they take it out? Do
either of you know? I don't know.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
I guess it played in front of some screenings in LA.
Oh, interesting.
And it played at the premiere.
Was it at the very beginning of the film?
Yeah.
And does it give more explanation than was present in the film?
Yes. It's like 5 minutes that it explains Tesla and Edison and Eiffel at the top.
Yeah.
And I think probably, this is just speculating, but probably that stuff got excised because it serves as a perfect introduction to the World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Like it leads you in, it's like a promo spot at the 64 World's Fair.
Yeah.
And they probably... excised that in favor of the horrible framing device of Clooney and Britt Robertson bantering.
Yeah, so let's talk about that framing, because I agree that... I think that, for me, the biggest problem that the film has is a pacing problem. Mm-hmm. I think that it doesn't carry out in the way... It makes you really excited, but it doesn't carry that out in all the right ways. And I think the framing device is one of these things that just... bothered me as throughout the whole thing. I think I would have much preferred to see George Clooney appear just as the grumpy old man in the mm-hmm. middle of the movie. I think that's where he belongs. Mm-hmm. I think that it I don't know anything about this, but it feels like a studio thing to say, no, you got to put Clooney at the beginning of the movie because that's how you're going to get people into it, sure. or something. You know, I don't know that or anything, but I don't think that framing device works as well. This is sort of maybe a controversial thing to say. I think that Ratatouille's story, another Brad Bird film, which is an amazing... I actually just watched Ratatouille over the weekend because I wanted to, like, revisit Brad Bird stuff. I think Ratatouille is a near-perfect film. But I think that the story and the way that the story unfolds runs some of the same risks that Tomorrowland does, and I think that it works in Ratatouille more than it works in Tomorrowland. But the story of Ratatouille is... if you were to put that into a sentence... It's sort of hard to encompass the whole movie in that, because you start off with the colony and loves cooking, and then you're introduced to Linguini, and then you find out, and then later you find out, and you have the conflict with, like, Ego, the critic, and stuff. You have lots of different conflicts kind of throughout the movie. It's less smooth than, like, The Incredibles, which is just a perfectly, like, streamlined, mm-hmm. you know...
It's compartmentalized.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so Tomorrowland, I thought... it reminded me of Ratatouille in that way, but I don't think it worked as well. It's the story, it goes in different places, not in a enough of a, I don't know, a moment. It doesn't have to be a line, or it doesn't have to be totally linear, but I think that the momentum really is at risk when you have a story that jumps around from time to time and stuff.
What we see has to reflect what we've seen before, and escalating from the colony to Linguini to Ego, that's a natural progression.
Right.
To, like, an arch... I mean, Ego's the villain of that movie, right?
Yeah, right.
But Tomorrowland, you've got the components, everything about the escalation is pretty... I mean, if you ignore the framing device, the escalation makes sense, and it's working until we get to Tomorrowland, and then we're sent far left.
Yeah.
Into another direction than we thought this movie was going.
Yeah.
And it's not a twist, it's just a misdirect. Like, it's an unpleasant misdirect.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything that worked really well in this movie that you guys thought? So I named a couple things that I liked a lot. I'm curious if there's any others that you think.
Yeah, I just really liked the performances again. I didn't have, like, any problem with any of the performances. I was really Britt Robertson, is that mm-hmm. her name?
Yeah.
I was really pleased. Like, I liked her quite a bit.
So she's been in other things. She was on a TV show or something. Is that what
I know her as? Dan in Real Life, Murder of Love Girl.
Right.
That's like the only.
That's a great movie.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But I loved her in that movie. She was a great, like, teenage angsty teenage daughter.
When she actually was a teenager back then.
And she was a teenager. Yeah. Now, yeah. I think she's like 24.
Yeah, 24, 25.
I bought her as a teenager.
Yeah, but I
did
her
too.
As a teenager.
Yeah, I did too.
She's looks smallish.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so
she's
kind of
a terrorist, also. Like,
yeah. With her iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. With her little iPhone helicopter thing. So I was pleased with her. And personally, I thought I was very excited about scenes with her and the little girl
mm-hmm.
Together, and just thought that was like a cool kind of feminist win for the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's I like them together a lot as well. I what is the name of it's escaping me.
Athena.
Yeah, Athena is a great character too. I
right.
really really like her, and it's a good performance.
It's
as
a great
well.
Performance.
Her
yeah,
dress,
was...
her dress in the beginning of the movie mm-hmm. is so cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
not
her. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's like lots of stuff was working. Like visually,
yeah.
It was. Like,
the swimming pools.
Right. Yeah. The swimming pools were so cool. I loved just watching Tomorrowland for the little brief
mm-hmm.
period that we got to watch it. Yeah, and I thought, like, the costuming was good, and, yeah.
I will disagree. I don't like one performance, and it's Little Clooney. That kid was nails on chalkboard for me. And my other little kids were, and maybe it was because he was paired against Athena, who I think is just like kind of a revelatory little actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has she been anything else?
I don't think so.
Yeah, this is...
And she's wonderful.
I'm excited to see what she does next.
I do think Brad Bird is the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he, I mean, as he, something about anime... And I need to see. I really need to see John Carter because I want to be able to say the same thing about that movie.
Uh-huh.
But I think these animators have such an amazing sense of a space.
Yeah.
And they know how to choreograph because they've had the freedom to make almost anything happen.
Yes.
With a pen. And there is just, there's a looseness to the direction while also being so controlled. This is just contradictions.
Yeah. No, he but is, it's open. Yeah, it's open right. to any possibilities, but it's totally it's choreographed.
Right. And it's really... really nice to watch, and it doesn't cut in the annoying way that a lot of modern action movies cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not quite as good as Mad Max, but I really think his sense of action and his sense of violence is really, really smart.
Yeah. Well, so talking about Mad Max, the theme, and it's more of a, it's more than a theme. It's like the thesis of the movie that like, we are so complacent with the destruction and the negativity in the world that we enjoy destruction and like we see all these terrible things happening, and rather than seeking to change it or make the world a better place, we kind of revel in it, right? I think that idea certainly is an idea that I agree with, but it's unfortunate timing because Mad Max could be seen as the exact thing that it's talking about, mm-hmm. but Mad Max has done so well.
Mad Max so... isn't what it's talking about, I don't think.
It's a post-apocalyptic, negative, sort of the world has gone to hell kind of thing.
That's true.
But yeah, keep going.
But I think something like The Walking Dead is a really apt comparison sure. for Tomorrowland, because yeah. that's a show that wallows in the misery of the world, and it's right. pretty nihilist, I think. And that's the kind of apocalyptic entertainment that I think Tomorrowland is railing against.
Okay.
Where Mad Max is so, like, it is a triumphant movie in the sense it's about a group of people who use the tools and the warfare of the patriarchy to defeat that and yeah. restore, right, create a new order.
Right.
And so
and like, it is much more
Tomorrowland
yeah.
and Mad Max kind of have a lot in common. Like, they're not, I don't think they're binary opposites.
I really like that. That's a good point, because I think at first glance, it's tempting to make that comparison or to recall Mad Max when they're talking about, because it's a movie that about the world, you know, being the post-apocalyptic kind of place. But yeah, that's a good point. Mad Max is definitely much more hopeful than most of these other movies are. Have you seen Mad Max?
I have.
You should see Mad Max.
I haven't seen it yet.
I've seen it three times.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so that's interesting. Okay, I feel like we were talking about something else. I don't remember where we were going.
Well, you were talking about the overall theme,
yes.
that which you liked. And I think that was why, at the very end, I had positive feelings. Because even though there were times, like you said when you first watched it, you felt like it was preaching at you yeah. a little bit. And there were times I felt like that. But I'm just, maybe it's because I'm an optimistic person, but I thought the very, very end was well done and was... did leave me with this feeling like, yeah, I want to be optimistic and help the world. And I think that was kind of the overall theme that I could get behind and kind of forgive some of the more preachy moments and just kind of look at it more as, you know, kind mm-hmm. of step back and be like, well, overall, I really liked the message. And sometimes they weren't as subtle as would have maybe been preferable, but I still... support you overall, Tomorrowland.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen preachy movies that I've thought were annoying, and mm-hmm. and I didn't think this one was annoying in its preachiness because I thought the ideas were good. But man, as a movie, it's just hard when those things don't come up organically, and or they do come up organically, as I would argue, but then they're also kind of just stated explicitly at the, you know, at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's hard for me.
Sometimes a villain in a movie will make a speech that's like that,
yeah.
and it will. Because it's not they're just like reciting plot points or reciting their evil plan, but it is just so forced. I think the thing that doesn't bother me about Hugh Laurie speechifying at the end of the movie is that he's pretty much dead on.
Right. It's mm-hmm. yeah.
It's one of those villain speeches you're like, oh well, yeah, he has a point.
Yeah.
Which is also why I struggle with Hugh Laurie's head getting smashed by the monitor.
Right.
Like, right. I think they're pretty merciless.
I think that's dumb.
Yeah.
Because he's a compelling villain in the sense that he's right.
Yeah.
He has a point, and he didn't, he didn't engineer this thing for villainy.
No.
Like, this is a thing that got out of his hand, went wrong, and he's like, well, damn it, you didn't listen to me, you know?
Yeah,
like
he wanted to show the world that, you know, like, this is what's going to happen, so you need to fix it. And then, you know, when he saw the response...
He gave up.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that was convincing enough motivation for him to become evil enough to just smash and kill at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Because it seemed like he was disappointed in the world, but really, is he going to get so bitter that, you know, he deserves to just... die because he's now pure evil or something?
It's all evidence that the monitor doesn't make a whole ton of sense.
The monitor thing was confusing.
Yeah, maybe listeners, if you don't understand the monitor thing, write in. Give us some feedback if you disagree.
Why, and speaking of, if Clooney invented the monitor, why exactly did he get exiled from
Toronto? That's never explained.
I was trying to piece that together, and then like plot synopsis I've read online afterwards, trying to see like what people were getting at. You know, I like to read what how other people summarize movies to make sure that I'm on the same page.
Yeah,
and it said that like, and but this isn't in the movie, so maybe this is a totally random thing that someone made up. But a couple different things I read said he was exiled because he saw the future and saw that the world was coming to an end. And then lost hope and became too pessimistic, and so they kicked him out.
Oh.
No, but the movie does not make that. The movie, that seems like, that sounds like things that the movie said, but I don't think the movie says
does
that.
Does it not say, okay, because I was like, I missed that if the movie said it, but maybe I just missed
they
it.
They say you lost hope. They say, he says he's a pessimist. Mm-hmm. And then, I guess it implies that he saw the future, but by all accounts... what the movie's articulating makes it look like he left on his own terms. He got mad at Athena or something and left.
Mm-hmm. But they said they kicked him out.
Though. No, I think it seems like they kicked him out, but I don't think that it says why.
Yeah, they kicked him out and you just think, oh, well, that's probably what he wanted.
Maybe, yeah.
That's what the movie
because he's lost, he's lost hope and stuff.
It doesn't explain why they kicked Athena out really either, does it? Besides that she... was like more empathetic than they thought robots should be or something, but it doesn't get into that.
Yeah.
Does it describe why?
Does it?
And then my other big question is what happened in the years after that? Like, I never had a clear sense of why Tomorrowland became so abandoned. I knew that he was kicked out. I knew that George Clooney was kicked out, but they come back and it was like desolate compared to the commercial one that they showed. And there's no explanation, like, there's no explanation of why at all. It seems like there should have been the same number of people.
Well, I'll throw
there
this.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't understand at all. Does anyone understand?
This is a 3-hour movie that had to be 120 minutes for some reason.
Yeah. Or a series. Make it a series.
Yeah.
There could have been, I would like to see the 3-hour movie. I would like to see that. The thing that I want to stress is that the negative feelings that I have about this movie are more interesting than the negative movies that I would have about a movie like, I don't know, something else that's popular or, you know, really big.
Entourage.
Entourage. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I feel like I love that this movie shoots for big, ambitious things. It doesn't reach totally, but I feel Brad Bird's passion and his talent in this thing that ultimately doesn't work, or it doesn't work completely, I would say. But I think that a lot of it does work. I think it's certainly worth seeing. I think that it's worth seeing for the elements of it that are wonderful and Brad Birdian.
Yeah. I am surprised at how poorly it's done.
Well,
I don't think it deserves to be doing that poorly.
So Rotten Tomatoes, it's like less than 50% at this point. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that a lot of those reviews are probably conflicted and kind of fall down on the negative
side.
Well,
not just reviews. I'm just surprised that more people aren't out seeing it.
Yeah,
weird marketing. Well.
There are tons of people that don't read movie reviews or care.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, weird. Not. It's weird marketing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Let me use this as my weekly plug to not use Rotten Tomatoes as a resource.
Okay.
It is evil.
Oh, nice.
But it's what you're
talking about. That
it's what you're describing.
Yeah.
I mean, a movie that averages, you know, 2.5 stars out of 5 or 3 stars out of 5 could be labeled as a rotten review.
Right.
And this like polarized system is completely unhelpful because there are lots of okay movies that get pegged as like 18% rotten, or lots of okay movies that get 96% fresh just because they're in that okay range.
Right.
Like Rotten Tomatoes is very good at accounting for wonderful movies and horrible movies.
Yeah.
But there's a huge middle that gets lost.
That's a good point. Have you guys seen, I'm sure you guys have seen Mission Impossible, Brad Bird's Mission Impossible film. Did you see that, Brad? You don't like action movies.
I don't like action
movies.
That's
right. So you haven't seen.
No, probably not.
You haven't seen. Oh, you need to see that. But what I would say, Hunter, I'm curious if you agree with me. I just rewatched that one over the weekend as well. I don't think Tomorrowland is, like, considerably worse than that film. I think that that film also has gaping things that are issues and a villain that's not very interesting, but it has some really, really cool elements, and I think that's what a lot of the love of that movie comes from, is all these cool elements coming to play. I think Tomorrowland has a lot of those same things. Well, do you have a thought on that?
I think we have a lot. I think our rubric for action movies like that is a lot different.
Yes.
And I think we're willing to forgive different things, and we accept different things.
That's true.
I don't know where Tomorrowland falls. I don't know what kind of movie it is exactly.
Right.
But we are harsh. People are probably being overly harsh on it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what those circumstances are. I do think as I've been thinking about Ghost Protocol, the more I see it as a Brad Bird movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, this is a movie about people who are special getting killed off for being special. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah. Well, and the thing that's so fun about that Mission Impossible movie is all the technology just doesn't work in that. Like they're constantly, like, because Mission Impossible is all about these cool gadgets, and throughout the whole movie, you have these cool gadgets working and then not working, like working and then failing at the right moment, and then you have to find another solution and stuff. So there's lots of really fun inventive stuff in that movie. I agree that the criteria that we use to judge it is just different, because it's not trying to be insightful or really that emotionally compelling or anything. It's just about cool stuff happening. And I think Tomorrowland has really, really high ambitions.
And Tomorrowland's juggling. Yeah, it's juggling a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Because Mission Impossible's one job is to be cool.
Yes.
And it does that.
Yeah.
Tomorrowland is trying to be not only cool, but smart, and not just in a screenwriting smart way, like really intelligent and romantic. And I mean, romantic in multiple senses. It's trying to be a real deal capital M movie.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
I just thought of this as you're saying everything Tomorrowland was trying to be. It wasn't ever trying to be funny, was it?
I think so. I think there's jokes.
Yeah,
there's, and I think a lot of them work, too.
I didn't laugh ever.
Oh,
I laughed a lot. Okay, yeah.
Britt Robertson punching, like, sending Clooney backwards with the force field, and her laugh when she does that. Oh, her giggle is so good. That's
interesting. I didn't laugh. I, like, almost sort of laughed at the very end when Athena said, like, that George Clooney's not funny.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say? Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say when they were, like, having their moment.
No. No.
That would have been more laughing at. Yeah. But. No, that's a beautiful moment, guys. Oh, yeah. We've already talked about that. Okay. Yeah.
I laughed when Athena got hit by the car, so that's everything you have to know about. That's what you know about me.
Yeah. No, I loved that, too. That's a really, really good joke. There's other jokes, too. There's visual gags and stuff. It's clear that an animator made it.
If you didn't like the people in the gift shop, then I bet a lot of the jokes are probably just like, they're not your jokes. Which is,
I was
cool.
In a very empty theater too, and sometimes it's like other people's laughing that helps me cue into what's funny.
Yeah,
but it was like three other people, and there was not a lot of laughter happening.
Yeah,
one good joke in my screening when Britt Robertson knocks out the guard on the Eiffel Tower with the what's a dinghy?
What is that? Knocks out humans.
The tuning fork.
Tuning fork? I think it's the tuning fork, yeah.
They get inside the Eiffel Tower after that joke, and the person down the row from me, their wife must have whispered to them what had happened, because about 20 seconds after that, we got a, and that was it. Terrific.
I love those. Oh yeah, this movie it does not make me like Brad Bird any less. It does not make, because I was, before the movie came out, I was like, he's probably my favorite filmmaker. Like he's made movies that I love, and now I can't say that anymore. But it has not changed my feeling about him.
Oh, I like him more after this.
Oh, interesting.
Because like I said at the beginning, this is he's a major league weirdo.
Yeah,
and it's the cartoony stuff, and it's his ambitions. He is someone that he's got me. I'm going to pay attention to whatever he does forever.
Yeah. That's good to hear. Yeah. I just think he's had an interesting career, because for a long time, I mean, for a long time, his career kind of ran parallel to John Lasseter's, where John Lasseter was working kind of with Disney and then starting up Pixar and making all these cool animated movies. But I think they're in the same class from CalArts, I think.
Wow.
Bradford's
old.
yeah, he is. So his career before Pixar was really difficult because, you know, he worked on The Simpsons for quite a while and did some great stuff with The Simpsons in the early 90s, somewhere around that. But then the Iron Giant, you know, which is it's a wonderful film, but that had a hard time finding an audience. You know, now it's considered, you know, a cult masterpiece or whatever. But Warner Brothers did not treat that movie right. And it was the animation department of Warner Brothers was crumbling as the movie was like trying to come out. And so the studio just did not put enough into that to really sell it. And so he just didn't have a break for a long time, and he had all these cool ideas, but I just feel like this is totally me just reading onto his career, but he totally just, you know, struggled. And then finally it was so great when he met Pixar, because it was like this perfect match of somebody, of a place that was willing to do his ideas. And The Incredibles is the result of that, and it was so good, and it was so well received, and it was so popular. It was just like everything. But at the same time, I know that throughout Bird Bird's life, he's had to fight, you know, to get his creations made and seen. And I felt that tension in Tomorrowland. I felt like it was made by, and again, this is just me reading onto it, but I felt like it was made by somebody who was used to having to fight for things and probably was fighting for things in the very process of that movie. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't natural. It didn't flow as easily. It wasn't just a sure bet. It was, you know, it's the result of a fight, you know? And so there's some bruises on this movie. There's some scars. It doesn't all work.
It true that he turned down Star Wars to do Tomorrowland?
Yeah.
Is that a true?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
That's what
And
I
probably
heard.
Tomorrowland would not be made if he didn't make that decision.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing with, like, Jurassic World that has to do with Brad Bird.
Really?
Not doing Star Wars, which we can talk about that later.
Oh, I'm curious about that.
Apparently, Colin Trevorrow
right.
is directing.
Yeah.
He did Safety Not Guaranteed, and now he's doing Jurassic World.
Right.
Which
is a huge jump.
Right. When Star Wars Episode 7 got announced, Brad Bird was their number one guy to do it. And he said, I'm doing Tomorrowland. And Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall from Lucasfilm said, let's see if you can do both. And he said, I don't know. And Brad Bird said, how about, there's this guy who reminds me a lot of me. He did this movie called Safety Not Guaranteed. And they said, okay, so what we do is he'll do all the pre-viz work and do all the pre-production directing for Star Wars. You'll come in and direct the production. And so that'll hopefully be after Tomorrowland's over, and you'll just direct production, which is a bizarre way to make a movie.
Yeah.
And they ended up realizing that was a terrible idea, but that was how they got Trevorrow's name in their system, and he met with Spielberg, and it was... So it's like a crazy line from Brad Bird saying, this guy reminds me of me, to getting him that job on Jurassic World.
Oh, fascinating. Wow. That's really interesting. That's not a Disney movie though, right?
Jurassic World? No, but it's Lucas. But Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy are both Lucasfilm and Amblin.
Oh.
And so...
Okay.
Okay,
so that...
Because she took over as chairman of Lucasfilm after
right.
the sale.
Right.
But she's also in charge of Amblin, which is Jurassic World.
That's that connection. Huh. By the way, this is a tangent, but I heard the score for Michael Giacchino. He released like a couple tracks of the Jurassic World score. That made me excited to see the movie. I have to say, this trailers may have me nervous, but hearing that Brad Bird says that it reminds him of himself,
yeah.
That's interesting. I'm definitely more curious about that than I was last week with that news. Anyway, well, Tomorrowland. Anything else that we want to say about this movie, you guys?
It's worth seeing.
Okay.
Is a movie worth, and it's a movie
yeah.
worth talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is definitely worth seeing, and that the conversation it inspired is interesting, and, you know, I don't think it's a perfect movie. I think it has lots of problems, but it's interesting to talk about the problems,
yeah.
and the ideas in it are certainly worth thinking about.
Totally. So Brad Bird's next film is The Incredibles 2.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like finally the sequel that people have been wanting for all this time. Do you guys have any thoughts about what that movie's going to be like? What do you think? Who knows?
I don't know.
Absolutely no idea. I do know that somebody tweeted, there was a rumor going around
uh-huh.
last week, that, or a couple weeks ago. I can't remember what it was about, but it was someone saying, I heard that Incredibles 2 is going to be all about the kids. And, like, it's a dismissive thing. And then Brad Bird actually tweeted at this random person and said, calm down, I got this. Which was like, whoa, that's very...
nice.
He's got it.
Rumors are rumors, I've got this.
Yeah, no, by the way, I love following Brad Bird on Twitter. I've liked him in Wake of the Movie, too. Because as the movie's gotten really, you know, mixed reviews, he's been active on Twitter and kind of responding to stuff.
Which is he defending?
He defends it, yeah. And cool. Yeah, it's been cool to follow him. But that's a cool tweet that about the Incredibles 2. Because he totally does. The thing that I think is important to remember about the Incredibles 2 is that the first Incredibles came out in 2004. And they started production on it in, 2000. Mm-hmm. And that was before this Superman or superhero thing that we have. There were very few superhero movies before that point. You had Superman and Batman, and that was it. All the Spider-Man and... Marvel stuff and everything, X-Men, Dark Knight, all the different iterations of superhero that we've had has come since The Incredibles. So it's going to be interesting to see, is The Incredibles a superhero movie in the way that it was or in the way that it, what is it going to do to the genre? Because it was more original back then, but I'm sure that they're going to do something interesting with the genre. If anybody's going to unpack and deconstruct the superhero genre and do cool things with it, I'm sure it's going to be Brad Bird and Incredibles 2, so I'm really excited about that.
Most definitely.
All right, well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Let me ask, is there anything you guys want to plug? Anything? I will plug that in a couple episodes, in a couple weeks, listeners, you will hear more of Hunter. So this has been a fun reintroduction to you before you hear this very exciting thing that we're hinting at. Hunter, anything else that you want to plug that you're working on or anything?
Nothing that I'm working on. Nothing I can talk about right now.
Okay. But. Well, I'm excited that you came on the podcast. Anything you want to mention, Brooke? Any cool projects or anything?
Not really.
Okay. Well, thank you both for coming on the Pixar Podcast. Listeners, you can find the show notes for this episode at thepixarpodcast.com. We want to know what you think. Did you love Tomorrowland? Did you hate Tomorrowland? Were you mixed? Did you have interesting conversation with your friends about it? Give us your thoughts at The Pixar Podcast on Twitter or thepixarpodcast@gmail.com on email. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here next week. Thank you.